Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome into KER Politics. Going to spend part of the first half with my friend Spoonful of Courage, Dr. Chuck, and we're going to talk a little bit about not the booklet, where I'm going to throw him a question that I had thrown at me this morning that is very, very interesting. The question has to do with acceptance. A lot of people, including myself, harbor some ill feelings towards some of the things that the Democrats are doing right now. And my friend, who is also a retired physician, said, "You know, Al," he said, "I simply can't deal with this because I'm viewing as what's going on as the end of the Republican Party." And I said, "Don't even say that." I said, "You know, this too shall pass. Just accept it. Give it over to God. Let him handle it. And wait and see where we're at, say, at the end of August, the early part of September. By that time, the liberals will have been given enough rope to either succeed or to hang themselves. And regardless, there's nothing at this moment in time that we can do. Doc, I'd like to ask you a question. And my question, Dr. Page, is, how would you have answered that question?
Wow.
Oh, come on.
That's one of those life, universe, and everything kind of questions. You know, I do not think that it is the end. I think, you know, we talked on the last show about we have to respond with the end in mind, and we can't think short term. And I think that's what a lot of people, whoever stormed the Capitol, whether it was, we hear all these conspiracy theories and stuff, and as I've noticed now, it's called an insurrection. But, you know, whoever did this, you know, right-wing extremists, whatever, it was not a good idea. We know that's not the way. That's not the way to fight a battle. But I do not think it's the end. I mean, I think it's just the beginning. I do think there's always hope. You know, I do believe that conservative values are the right path for people. I think for people who, you know, there's different levels of thinking, Al. There's people who wear the victim glasses, you know. Everything is always, you know, the consequences or the outcome of their life is always dependent upon the consequences. You know, you change the circumstances and then you expect a different outcome. And that's what we're seeing here with so many people. You know, C equals O. The second level are people who, you know, they begin to think that, you know, their response makes a big difference. But I think on a bigger level, you know, there's you know, more than wearing the victim glasses, more than wearing the, you know, the hero glasses that we're going to, you know, fix this, I think looking at things through a bigger perspective, realizing that, you know, I'm still a strong believer that God is in control of this. You know,
I am too, Chuck. Sorry.
And, you know, and just looking back, you know, and thinking about, there's a book in the Bible, Book of Esther.
Yep.
You know, your Jews who are listening may be familiar with that book. You know, God is never mentioned, and there was a lot of things that were happening politically that it seemed like that a whole race of people were going to be, were going to be killed. And yet, in that process, at the darkest moment, somebody stepped up and made a difference, and that was Esther. You know,
yep.
God is never even mentioned in the whole book. It's interesting. But yet we know behind the scenes that somehow God is working out things toward his outcome. And I think all of us need to just to realize that we can all make a difference. You know, we always think about what's happening on a big picture politically, but I think we need to take a step back and look at things more locally and more our sphere of influence and how we can influence people. And I'll tell you, you know, I'm a physician. I have people that come out of my office that have very different beliefs than I do.
Sure.
But, you know, yet I can always find some kind of common bond with that person. I always find a way to connect and unite with that person. You know, I really feel like, you know, so often we're so focused on what's happening up in Washington, D.C., we forget about what's happening in our own neighborhood, and we can make a difference with people. I still believe that you know, we can begin to have conversations with people. It's about relationships. And I think that we can make a difference.
You know, I think you're 100% right, Dr. Chuck. I agree 100% on that. I just find it to be very, very interesting right now. I quoted from a little scripture also this morning when I was talking to my friend. But I want to tell you, by the way, who is going to be on the show tomorrow, by the way. But regardless of that, what I want to say is that I believe God is in control, you know, and my stance on the situation right now is I'm going to give the liberals as much rope as they need to either prove themselves to be correct or to hang themselves. And you know what? Once I made that decision and simply said, Jesus, take over, take this out of my mind, please. It's in your hands. You know what happened? I wasn't angry anymore.
Yeah, and I don't think, and here's the thing, you know, the scriptures talk about being, it's a very wise statement, being quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. And, you know, we're just seeing just the reverse in our culture. Everybody's mad, everybody's talking, and nobody's listening.
Right.
And I think if we just kept that kind of proverb in the back of our mind, quick to hear, just to listen to people, you know, and I think so often even people who don't believe the way that we do, if we just stop and listen, at least if anything, and just hear people out, you know, and hear what they're feeling, even if they're way out in left field, just listen, hear what they're saying, and then be slow to speak and be careful with the words that we say.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, isn't this whole situation just a great example of what happens when you say things and you don't really think about it? I mean, you know, once again, Donald Trump is a good example of that.
Yeah, he is.
Said things that have inflamed people. On the other hand, Biden has not made it any better. I mean, you know, once again, he said he was going to bring people together, and the first thing he's doing is saying inflammatory statements. And so
right.
I just think on a personal level, I mean, regardless of your politics, let's just remember, you know, quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. And I think, you know, I really think there's hope. I really do. I mean, I don't expect people to believe exactly the way that I believe. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But I think we have to get to the point where we're going to stop and we're going to listen to people and we're going to value them as people, irregardless of their ideological, you know, beliefs and presuppositions, that we just need to just value them as people and stop and listen. I think if we'll do that, we'll build a lot more bridges. And I think in the long run, that's the kind of society and the kind of culture that we want to live in. That's the thing about the United States, is that everybody can voice their opinions, you know, and we want to have that kind of society, you know, where even if somebody is, they're crazy, at least they can voice their opinion. They're not entitled to their own truth, but they are entitled to their own opinion. And that's the kind of society that we want to be able to create, so that we can have conversations with people about things. But right now, everybody's so angry and everybody's so emotionally charged that we're undermining the whole, our whole society.
You know, Dr. Spoonful of Courage, I want to tell you, I agree with you 1,000% on that one. Not Dr. Spoonful of Courage, obviously, Dr. Charles Page. Got a few copies of that book left, by the way. If anybody wants a copy, simply get in touch with me. I'll get in touch with Chuck, and we'll get you a copy of the book. This man is a genius. Listen to what he has to say. Totally different.
You know, surgeon, sometimes wrong, but never in doubt.
There you go. Okay, stick around, you guys. Got to take a commercial break. Be right back.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in, time for the second segment of the KE Report. Chatting right now with Mark Williams, very sophisticated financial planner, been around for a lot of years. Advice for people like Mr. Williams is critical during these turbulent times in the economy. Mark, if I'm not mistaken, you specialize primarily in retirement savings.
That's correct. Insurance and retirement, correct.
Tell us a little bit about your qualifications, if you would, sir.
I'm president and CEO of a company called Brokers International out of Des Moines, Iowa. I've been in the financial services business my entire career, about 32 years.
Wow.
Mainly on the insurance and investing side. I have worked with three major insurance carriers, and I have been the president of two major insurance distribution companies. Currently at Brokers International, we assist over 4,500 independent financial planners, registered reps, insurance agents throughout the country. We distribute insurance products through over 50 different carrier relationships. We also own a broker-dealer and an RIA. And through that broker-dealer and RIA, we service about 200 registered reps and asset managers.
Mark, I am very concerned right now about retirement savings simply because I'm very aware of the fact, having been in this business for over 40 years, I'm very aware of the fact that Social Security pretty much in jeopardy, in my opinion. Very quickly, could you elaborate on that?
If you look at the history of Social Security and the population, Social Security was created. We had, for every one person receiving Social Security, you had three people working and paying into the system. Now you almost have the exact reverse. For every three people receiving benefits, you have one worker contributing. Now, you and I both know that's a recipe for disaster over the long haul. Either we're going to have to raise taxes or raise the amount going into the system from the small amount of workers there are to recipients, or you're going to have to reduce the benefit or possibly a mixture in between. As well, we're looking at increasing the age in which you would be eligible for that benefit. So that whole recipe isn't a positive one. Which, back to your earlier comments, those people that have savings, especially during the COVID times, that may find themselves out of work or furloughed, are now starting to dip into those savings.
Yep.
So if you were fortunate enough to have your own savings, now you're looking at the possibility of less benefits from the government, using some of the benefits you've saved for. And that's a recipe for disaster, quite frankly. And I think the majority of the population really needs to sit down with someone and talk about their options.
On a personal note, I agree with you 1,000%. And the reason I do is that having a substantial background in economics and finance, I realized back in the 80s and 90s that our economy, with the level of debt that we have and our Social Security system, which was great when it started, but it is really in a precarious situation right now. Listeners need to be aware of the fragility of the longevity, I guess is the word that I would use, sir, of the Social Security system. I think people who count simply on that are making a big mistake.
I 100% agree with you. And add into that the advancements in technology that we've made in medicine, which are incredibly positive, but we're actually extending the amount of time that people live and live quite healthily and productive. Think about that old adage of I'm going to retire at 55 or 60. I think the new normal is going to be living longer means working longer. It's more benefits that you need and or more of your own personal savings you need to live on. You also mentioned the debt. So when you add demographics and the advancements in medicine and longevity, and we have all of these other issues, the debt that we have, lack of benefits, the onus really does fall on the individual to really start thinking about how they plan for their
future. Mr. Williams, tell us a little bit about the products and services that you offer, not necessarily in the insurance industry, but primarily in the financial planning industry.
Sure. So one of the great advantages in the financial planning world is the ability for the average person to have access to what I would consider top tier money management. If you went back 20 or 25 years, in order to have an asset manager manage your money, you needed to open accounts with $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
Today, that's not true. In fact, today, the amount of information you have and the access for the average consumer to be able to open an account with $10,000 or $15,000 and have access to the same money managers that many, many much more wealthy people have is a huge advantage. So one of these services that we offer is access to what we call TAMPs, or Turnkey Asset Management Programs. And there are literally thousands of financial planners nationwide that your listeners can reach out to and get advice on who could manage your money. And you really do have access to professional money managers. So that's the first section of what we do, is match someone's needs with the type of money management that we believe that could be beneficial to them. The second and then the other thing that we offer, of course, through a broker-dealer is access to stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs. One of my recommendations always is for someone to seek out professional advice. So again, we work with literally thousands of financial planners nationwide that we can offer referrals to. We can offer a client or a customer the way to research those financial planners to make sure that they are suitable and that they fit those needs of that consumer. And we can give them a sneak peek into their background, and then provide a platform to not only take a look at what their needs are, but also provide hundreds and hundreds of solutions that the general public might not know about. So those are some of the services that we offer to the public.
You know, I think it's very important for people to go to an expert when they are looking to enhance their own personal financial security. No question about that. Real quick, sir, how does your insurance products, how do they fit in?
So, and I'm glad you asked. So, first of all, life insurance. If anyone relies on someone else for income, the number one question we ask is, God forbid they don't make it home, how do you replace that income?
Right.
And that's really with life insurance. And life insurance should be purchased younger, because generally speaking, the younger you are, the healthier you are. So that's the first thing I'd look at. And the second thing is the new generation of annuities. Annuities can be a nice platform, because what an annuity provides in its basic form is the ability to receive an income stream that a customer can't outlive. And in fact, not only can they not outlive it, you can designate money to be paid to a spouse or a significant other once you have passed. And that steady stream of income is not affected by interest rates or the stock market in many cases, and there are literally hundreds of types of annuities. So those two products specifically are somewhat of the foundation of many financial plans for a lot of the public.
Mark, I want to make one comment. Number one, we're out of time here for the radio portion. Record a second segment for you. We will air it as a weekend special. Take about another maybe 3, 4, 5 minutes. Can you do that?
You bet, sure.
I want to carry Mark Williams over into a weekend special. The reason I'm doing that is because I believe that we are really in uncharted waters right now. You need to be financially secure, because that way you can weather all the storms that the political turmoil is going to cause us and has already caused us. Listen to what he has to say in the special.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in, Todd, for the second half of KER Politics. I'm going to talk about what's going on in the country right now with the change of the inhabitant of the executive branch. Got Jim McKinney on the line with me, and one of our neighbors who is very politically astute, by the same token, has some serious questions he wants to ask Jim. I asked him to come on the program, and the reason I did is because my buddy's questions are very typical of what's going on in society right now. Mr. Neighbor Al, you want to ask the first question to Jim McKinney?
Sure. Yeah, I've been obviously very disappointed in the outcome of the election, and especially the Georgia runoff. I didn't think that was handled very well. But, going forward, I'd be interested in what conservatives could do heading up to the 2022 election, because I think it's mandatory that we take back the House and hopefully the Senate. So I'd just be interested, Jim, in where you think things are going to be going, and what we can do to facilitate the conservatives getting back into some position of power.
Well, I think that's a great question. And there's a tremendous amount of frustration out there with what happened. And, you know, taking away, if you just stop and you know, the evidence of problems with the election, and you forget about that, and don't think about the presidential race, but consider the House races, consider the state legislative races and the governor's races. The Republican Party did exceptionally well this last in November. So there's optimism out there for conservative views and values. What you don't have is confidence in our system, and that's the most important thing that has to happen, in my view, is we have to rebuild confidence in our system. And what that means is the Republican legislatures in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania and Arizona, they need to hold people accountable to their own state laws on how to manage the elections. And they cannot allow this continued COVID and the mail-in ballots that basically have created such distrust in the system. That's the first step. The second step is to quit kowtowing to the left. In my view, the people in Washington, D.C., especially a lot of the Republicans that have been around for a long time, they live in a world where they are friends and have drinks after work with their Democratic partners. And we want, you know, some relationship, of course, always positive relationship. But what's happening is they're being suckered by their Democratic leaders, because the Democratic leaders in the House and the Senate, they do not care about the American people, from my perspective. They care about power. And you have to go into this understanding that's their objective. And what I see is a Republican Party that's going to be quite frustrated, that's going to have some realignment time right now back to those basic principles that Trump represented. And that's, you know, he wanted to give manufacturing back. He wanted to give people, the minorities, he wanted to give the average working class a future and give America strength. And what we've seen from the Democrats is, hey, you know what, we're going to succumb to the powers of corporate corruption. We're going to let the tech gurus shut us down, and they've got to stop that. They've got to not allow that to happen, and that's the big fight right now.
Jimmy, I got to tell you, I'm not quite sure how we can accomplish that right now. The reason I say that is America right now is in an incredible state of turmoil. I was awoken this morning to the news in the Seattle Times that the distribution of the COVID medication is simply too disorganized right now. Actually, the reporter who wrote this particular article waited in a line which was 1 mile long in Squim, Washington, to get the inoculation. And when he was roughly five people away, they announced they couldn't do it anymore because they had run out. When, number one, we need some disorganization. And if people don't understand that the Liberal administration is totally screwing up the COVID vaccination distribution, which I just described how that's happening in Washington State, if they don't understand that, they won't understand anything. So you have to, I believe, keep tabs on the success of the tasks that are being undertaken by the Liberals right now. So far, we've had no luck whatsoever. Jimmy, comments?
Well, the reason why we've got no luck is because the media, the tech giants, have suppressed any knowledge that undermines the narrative that there's mistakes in New York, that there's mistakes in Washington State or California. They're taking away actual dialogue. They're taking away the ability to discourse or complain or even, you know, question the narrative. And I think that's an important thing that has to happen. And I did the radio show for our local radio station this morning. I do my weekly show on foreign affairs, and I talked about foreign governments our allies that are actually very frustrated, not big fans of Donald Trump, but are very frustrated with the tech companies clamping down on democratic free speech.
Yep.
And that's where we've got to get the democratic powerful influencers to say, you know what, this can go both ways. So you better step up to the plate right now and start control, you know, stopping this control of information. And that's going to be the biggest challenge in my view, because really it's about the propaganda. That's where what's shaping everyone's vision. That's what's scaring people. And as we get more and more information on what happened on January 6th, we're realizing that maybe the narrative that came out of the media immediately was false. A lot of the information that was suppressed about the elections is completely being suppressed. We've got to change that. And that's your point is good. If people don't understand it and we can't debate it, we can't dialogue about it, then we will not know. And that's going to be problematic.
We have an almost insurmountable problem at this point. Al, I want to ask you, we've got about 2 minutes left here. Jim understands the clock. You got another question, sir?
Do I have another question? Yeah, well, yeah, following up to Jim's most recent comment about, that you say that the big tech and the suppression and all, that's our big challenge. How do we go about, crafting debate and moving away from big tech's control? How do you do that?
Yeah,
it's a tough
one. Jimmy, 2 minutes.
Yeah. So the first is the Section 230 in the Federal Communications Act that allows them basically, I look at it like this. They produce the paper that the newspaper prints the information on. They're controlling what the newspapers print on the paper. That's what the platforms are doing right now. That can't last. They can't tell and control what people are saying, what are being done. So we've got to figure out how our legislators can reach out and stop that type of control. The second piece of it is there is enough information out there. You just have to go to alternative sources, and you have to be able to present that a little bit better. It's tough in a monopolistic system, but that's where we've got to go. And, of course, as they try to clamp down, you're going to have to use anti-monopoly rules with what happened with Amazon closing out Parler, and then Google and Apple closing out their ability to actually download the apps. That has got to change. And it's not that hard to do, but they have to get consensus. We have to push our legislators to do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've got about 25 seconds left here. I'm going to have to take a real quick commercial break. Pardon me, Big Al's going to be back in a flash. Frog in my throat. Don't open your mouth, Corlin. Anyhow, going to have to take a real quick commercial break, just probably a few seconds, just a few, very few, 1 or 2 minutes, and I'm going to be right back with our friend from Semiamu and Jim McKinney. Stick around. Okay, back to wrap up KER Politics here with my main contributor, Jim McKinney. Jim, as you all know, was the chairman of the re-elect Trump committee. He understands probably as well as anyone the huge political challenges that are ahead of us right now. Mr. Mystery Man from Semiamu, what questions do you have at this point for Jim?
Yeah, I'm gonna pass on that just for the moment, Al, because I'm looking through my questions, and I thought we were just about at the end of the program.
No.
So,
think about something else. I've got a lot of things I want to talk with Jimmy about. Jimmy, I think
let me finish up with what we in the last segment we were talking about what we can do.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you, Jimmy. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the first thing is a lot of conservatives right now are feeling isolated. They're feeling intimidated. And that's exactly what the left is trying to do to us. They're trying to scare people into away from the Trump agenda. They're trying to identify the person as a problem. that's going to not last very long, because the moment that President Trump is out of office, what is the media going to do to continue to harp on him as the evil bad guy? They're going to try it, and then they're turning, and what they're doing now is turning to specific individuals. We have to stand up and be strong and not allow that to happen. We have to ensure that people are not intimidated and not afraid to be positive about America, to believe in this country, to believe that free speech is the most essential element of our nation's existence. And the one place that started this for the entire world was right here. And we want to protect that. So, you know, we can't be intimidated. We can't be afraid. We've got to be able to say, okay, and not get angry and split. That's exactly what they're attempting to do. And that's what they did with many legislators, House members and senators, just after the January 6th events. And it turns out that maybe that's not exactly the narrative that was out there was not actually factual. There's a lot of people being arrested that were on the left that instigated some of the violence, and the timing of when Trump spoke versus when things started happening is completely different. So, you know, there's some facts that need to be expressed, and people have to not be afraid to stand up and say, you know what, America is a good place.
You know what, I have to say, that's what I've been thinking, Jimmy. And as all our listeners know, my official stance is to not even have an opinion on you. I mean, have an opinion, that's great, but wait until at least the end of August and see how the liberals fare in that particular time. More importantly, see how our country fares. And I think the best way to do that, as I was talking about in an earlier segment with Dr. Chuck Page, is let the anger go. Be middle of the road. Look at things in an unbiased manner. I have to say, as listeners are very aware, it's very, very difficult for me to do that because of my feelings toward the liberals. There are absolutely way too many unknowns out there. But the only way that this thing can be settled is by concrete action. Let's see what occurs between now and early September. Al, do you want to jump in?
Well, yeah, I agree with your statement. I was going to ask Jim about fundraising, because I thought with the end of the election and the Georgia runoffs that my mail with requests for money would calm down, but it seems like that's accelerated. And you know, quite honestly, I'm ticked off at the Republican Party. I don't think they handled this whole thing very well. I will say that I contributed modest amounts to a number of House candidates, women and African Americans, and virtually all of them won. And it just seems to me that that is where we have to put our money going forward try to flip the House and get the Senate back. So anyhow, your thoughts, Jim?
No, I agree. I think that's a very important strategy and thought that a lot of it's hard to lead. It's easy to criticize. And what you've seen over the last 4 years is continual contempt for this president, identifying him as a evil guy. And it was easy to do that. Now, when they have to lead, they have to make decisions. And those decisions they've been making, most of us understand, are not in the best interest of the American people. So the House will be essential to take back. And I believe there's a very strong case. And of course, what we saw with the number of Republican victories in the House this cycle means that there's a great opportunity. And if they continue to push a far-left progressive agenda and they continue to try to silence people, that's going to do blowback on them. And I really strongly believe that supporting those candidates, that viable candidates, ones that speak well, that look good, that have policies that are consistent with conservative values, that are still supporting the basic idea that America is the most important place in this on this planet to promote democracy and good values, those are the type of people we want to support. And we've got to be careful about it, and we've got to focus our efforts. The other point is we cannot allow the Democrats to own the dense urban environments without putting pressure on them in those areas. And that's why we're losing. When you look at the map of the United States, the electoral map, there's just a handful of major urban areas that dictated this. And of course, the fraud is, you know, legitimately, you have to question it. You've got to look at it. But you can't sit back and just say, we're going to cede Seattle, we're going to cede New York, we're going to cede, you know, just give that to the opposing voices. We've got to do something different there. And that's reaching out, I believe, to the minority communities, exactly what Trump was doing. He did well with Hispanics. He did really well with blacks. And that we've got to campaign, continue to go forward on and change that dynamic in the urban environments.
Well, Jimmy, what you're saying is something that I really want you to elaborate on, but that is more of the same. Now, it's really hard to say, it's impossible to say at this point, if the Republicans really lost the election. I mean, the opinion out there is there was enough vote rigging, for lack of better terms, going on that Trump actually won, not the various Republicans. But I want to say, when you look at what happened in Georgia, when you look at Pennsylvania, when you look at some of the other states, Arizona, Nevada, I think we have to change the minds of the powers that be in those states so audits are actually available. Any comments, Jimmy?
Let's look at what happened there.
Yeah.
So the Democrats very effectively used COVID to change laws to allow people to do mail-in balloting with extended balloting periods, and they did not review signatures and did not allow people to observe. There were so many corrupt activities that went along there, and those were actually Republican state legislators that were afraid with the accusations of COVID. The fear caused them to allow these rule changes. They've got to crack down and realize that exactly what happened, that this was a game that they lost. And what bothers me more than anything else when I see Liz Cheney and some of the other Republicans that have voted for impeachment is they do not understand a level of effort that went into intimidating people and changing these election outcomes through crazy, you know, these crazy rules that were allowed to go through for COVID. And that is something that we've got to stop. And hopefully Republicans will wake up and realize that exactly what the enemy is doing here. When I say the enemy, it's the people, the enemy of American policy, American of freedom, of individual choice and speech.
Yeah.
In order to gain power, we've got to stand up to that. And it bothers me that people don't understand the bigger fight here.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, we've got less than a minute left here, you guys. The one comment that I want to make is that the liberals ran a very, very effective campaign. I'm not happy
well,
with
you know,
I'm
remember
not,
what Joe
Jimmy,
Biden,
Jimmy, I'm not no, happy
no, just
with
real quick,
the
let
results.
Me say,
yeah, go ahead.
No, just let me say the one thing. Remember what Joe Biden said. We have the most organized and effective campaign fraud system. I can't remember the exact quote. Out there, and I think he was a Freudian slip telling the truth when he said that.
Well, that's very possible. You guys, we're just out of time for me to close this up. We got about 15 seconds left. Would like all the comments that we could get regarding what Jimmy and I and our friend are talking about right now. Let's flood the blog with ideas of what we can do. Hope you enjoyed KER Politics. I certainly enjoyed putting it together.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.